From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. High-level North Korean-South Korean talks got underway Tuesday at the truce village of Panmunjom with possible North Korean participation in next month's Winter Olympic Games at the top of the agenda. The South proposed family reunions during the Olympics, while the North offered to send a high-level delegation to the Games. Heading into the discussions, North Korean Chief Delegate Ri Sung-kwon said his side approached the talks in earnest and in a sincere manner aimed at a New Year's gift, what he called precious results to the Korean people. The talks, the first at the ministerial level in 2 years, are the result of the North's acceptance of a South Korean offer to meet following North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's New Year's Day offer of dialogue. Korea Society Senior Director Stephen Orper said Seoul has high hopes to reduce nuclear tension.
And they have put hope in both reducing tensions and perhaps even moving forward on family reunions. The significant part of this is that you have a new administration in Seoul that has quite a different tone even than the last meeting under the conservative administration. So there may be some potential there. The Sunshine administration, the progressive administrations of the early 2000s did make some headway with North Korea. So we'll have to wait and see over time whether this has sustainability for Seoul in its approach to Pyongyang.
The U.S. welcomed the talks but insists the Korean Peninsula must be denuclearized. Dozens of migrants are feared dead after Italian rescuers found an overcrowded trafficker's rubber dinghy that left Libya late last week, sinking off the coast Monday. The Coast Guard rescued nearly 90 migrants. The bodies of 8 women were also recovered. The International Organization for Migration said more than 119,000 were rescued and taken to Italy last year. Nearly 3,000 perished along the way. This is VOA News. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani Monday said the anti-government protests that swept the country last week were more about than just economics. They were also about people's political and social demands. Indiana University analyst Hussein Banai said such a frank admission in public is surprising.
I think what he's getting at is something that clearly the public has demonstrated over and over again, and he wants to acknowledge it so that his faction or his political party is seen as not aloof, but in fact very much aware of the fundamental problems that not just drove these protests, but continues to simmer in the society at large.
Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif warned neighboring countries against fomenting unrest. Iran's nuclear negotiator said his country might reassess its cooperation with the UN if President Donald Trump decides next week to end a waiver on U.S. sanctions of his country's oil exports. The Trump administration announced Monday it will suspend temporary protection extended to nearly 200,000 citizens of El Salvador who've lived in the U.S. since earthquakes in the Central American country in 2001. They hold what's called temporary protected status, which has shielded them from deportation.
Vamos a trabajar.
Salvadoran Foreign Minister Hugo Martinez said his government would work with the U.S. Congress to reach a permanent solution. Ira Melman is with the Private Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR.
We are now at least 17 years out from the original event in El Salvador that initially triggered TPS, and it is time that people honor their commitment that they were only going to stay here temporarily and return home.
The decision comes amid a debate over the status of hundreds of thousands of young immigrants who came to the country illegally as children. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence will travel to Jordan, Egypt, and Israel later this month, a trip put off from December after President Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Pence expected to visit 3 countries to hold talks with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and Jordan's King Abdullah. Egypt Monday announced it will hold its presidential elections between March 26 and 28. First results to be announced April 2nd. A runoff, if needed, will be held later that month. President el-Sisi, who ousted his predecessor in 2013, is yet to announce whether he'll run for a second term. Police in Nigeria said dozens have been killed in communal violence since New Year's Eve, 12 alone this past weekend in clashes between Muslim cattle herders and Christian farmers in central Nigeria. In Japan Tuesday, the benchmark Nikkei stock index hit a 26-year high, approaching 24,000 points. 2 U.S. indices, meanwhile, the S&P and NASDAQ scored their 5th consecutive record high close Monday. The benchmark Dow Jones slipped. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader signals it may be time for him to step down.
I would say it was a question of the realignment in the NPF, which makes it more difficult for NDC under its leadership to actually become victorious in elections, but also its health.
Shadrack Gutto is a professor emeritus of the University of South Africa. Uganda's main opposition, FDC, mounts a legal challenge to the recent constitutional amendment bill. Gambian President Adama Barrow sacks his interior minister in what some say is a consolidation of power. And Angola's new president holds first ever presidential news conference in more than 30 years.
The president said that because the worsening of the economic situations, there will not be increase on wage, clarifying that the country will follow some austerity measures in the next year or so.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai in Luanda. Disabled people protest in Liberia's capital for a living space and an initiative to restore Africa's forest landscape. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change has signaled it may be time for him to step down. Morgan Tsvangirai has been the leader of the MDC since its formation in 1999. But yesterday, Monday, Tsvangirai said he was looking at the imminent prospect of the older generation leaving the levers of leadership to the younger generation. He revealed in 2016 that he had cancer. Shadrack Gutto, professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, he says Tsvangirai's statement could have been influenced by two factors. One, his health, and two, the departure of Robert Mugabe and the realignment of the ruling ZANU-PF party, which makes it more difficult for the MDC under Tsvangirai's leadership to win a credible election.
His emphasis there was on the question of generational change. I think that it is a question of saying, what are the prospects for the MDC under his leadership? Since ZANU-PF, the person that he was really a figurehead of the ZANU-PF, is now removed. Is there any prospect of the MDC winning under his leadership? Secondly, I think the question of implying that there may be time for younger generation.
Do you think the comment by Mr. Tsvangirai, is it the realization that his time has come and passed, that he needs to go with the former President Mugabe, or is it personal? Because we heard that he is not well. Which one is playing here?
I think it is both. If one sees Mr. Tsvangirai is really getting thinner and thinner, which means that he has a health problem or he's challenged by some illness or whatever it is, he's not as strong and militant as he used to be. And I believe that it is partly a health issue where whatever it is, it has not been openly stated that he's not of good health himself, and therefore fighting ZANU-PF, which has realigned itself and now has a leadership which he can see is still popular, the chances of MDC beating them under his leadership are narrower. So I would say it is both a question of the realignment with ZANU-PF, which makes it more difficult for MDC under his leadership to actually become victorious in elections, assuming that the elections will be free and fair and credible, but also his health.
Professor, I'd like for you to talk about this development in the overall African context. Here we have, in Liberia, we have a young leader who was elected in the name of George Weah. We have in other African countries where the opposition has come to power. You mentioned the situation of now these African leaders who have stayed for a long time in power. Are they beginning to realize that it's better now for them to make way for the younger generation?
I think that is a message that what Tsvangirai has said is pointing out, and I think it is same thinking around the continent. But I think that Tsvangirai may be thinking that the prospect of him actually winning against the current realigned ZANU-PF under the leadership of Emmerson Mnangagwa and so on, supported by the military, is going to be very, very difficult. If it was Robert Mugabe still in power, I don't think that Tsvangirai would have said he's stepping down.
Shadrack Gutu is a Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. You're speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. Uganda's main opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, says it has put together a legal team to challenge the recently passed constitutional amendment bill. Patrick Amuliat Aboy, the FDC president, also says the party will launch a campaign to isolate members of parliament who voted for the law. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
While addressing journalists in Kampala yesterday, Monday, Amuliat said the constitution was passed illegally. He says his party cannot accept to live under a constitution that was amended with the regularities.
This is a command of Article 3 of the Constitution, where when the Constitution is overthrown, abrogated, suspended, or amended unlawfully, it should be challenged. And so the people of Uganda should do with whatever is within their means to ensure that we challenge what Parliament and Yoweri Museveni have done.
Parliament Helen Nandala Mafabi, also the FDC treasurer, agrees.
We now want also to call on experts, the constitutional lawyers, to really look at it. In fact, they should go to the constitutional court to ensure that this constitution of Uganda is a multi-party constitution. For example, the moment we became multi-party, workers' representatives should have gone out, AME should have gone out, because AME, so when they voted aye, so none of them could vote no.
An overwhelming majority parliamentarians, mainly from the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, NRM, voted to remove the age cap from the Ugandan constitution. 317 MPs voted for, while 97 MPs voted against it. Article 102B of the constitution previously required a person seeking to stand for the presidency to be between 35 and 75 years of age. The parliament also voted to extend the term of the local councils and parliament from the current 5 to 7 years. Amuliat says his party will organize countrywide protests demanding for the repeal of the law. He claims the new law could lead to political instability in the country.
Our teams are going to go out to build resistance against what has happened. Some Museveni and his people need to be aware that there are several calls that are being made by Ugandans that show that they are not pleased with what is now happening. We have had calls for secession. These calls feature the debate in parliament. People want to break away. And if the status quo continues, these calls are even going to be louder and louder. And who knows, this could be a source of confusion in our country.
Uganda's President Kaguta Museveni signed a controversial bill, commonly known as age limit, into law just 3 days to the end of last year. Those opposed the law believe it is meant to favor the incumbent president, who has been in power since 1986, to contest yet again. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 9th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. There was a milestone yesterday in Angola when new president João Lourenço held the country's first ever news conference in more than 30 years as he marked 100 days since taking over last year from longtime president José Eduardo dos Santos. Lourenço ruled out salary increases for civil servants as part of austerity measures to put Angola's economy back on track. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai says President Lourenço's news conference covered wide-ranging topics.
The president spoke about a number of questions from politics to economics. One of the main questions is that President Lourenço said that the sovereign fund is under scrutiny, and maybe his president, which currently is the son of the former President dos Santos, could be dismissed if investigation, which is going on, finds that there was a mismanagement at the sovereign fund, which was in charge of a lot of money, something like $5 billion US dollars.
The president made a remark about time for Angolans to tighten the belt, austerity measures. What does it have to do with his decision not to carry on the construction of a new port that was approved by the former president, Dos Santos?
There are two separate things. To block the construction of the new port at Barra do Dande, it was because the appointment for this big project was made without public consultations, according to President Lourenço. On the other thing, and so were questions about the wages, the president said that because the worsening of the economic situations, there will not be increase on wages, clarifying that the country will follow some kind of austerity measures in the next year or so.
The fact that the new president, Lourenço, had this news conference. Has this happened before under the former president? I mean, a news conference like this?
No. In more than 30 years, the former president, Dos Santos, never gave an open press conference, both for national media or foreign media. So it was something inedit. For the very first time, President Lourenço gave an open conference for everyone without any limitations. This was maybe one of the most sensational thing in this kind of situations.
What does this mean about his announcement for the Catholic Radio Iglesias to broadcast? Was this radio station closed down before?
No. The radio station was not closed, but under former President Dos Santos, the Catholic Radio Iglesia was not allowed to broadcast in the whole national territory. So today, President Lourenço gave a free way for the Catholic radio to broadcast in the whole country, which is an important step in terms of press freedom and freedom of expression.
What do Angolans think? Do they think that under President Lourenço that they might enjoy more freedoms?
In some way, most of the Angolans are, at least after these some days, happy with some measures of President Lourenço, happy with a climate with more press freedoms. There were some signs of guards at public media. It seems there are more pluralism, diversity, and the contradictory. So most of the Angolans agree.
Mario Alpavai is a veteran Angolan journalist. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. Gambian President Adama Barrow on Monday fired his interior minister, Habib Drame, and redeployed him to head the country's civil service. This follow reports the president is busy trying to consolidate power. As VOA's Pandere Umbai reports, Ibrahima Umbalo, governor of the West Coast region, has been appointed interior minister.
Gambia's Ministry of Interior is becoming a hot seat to occupy under President Adama Barrow's administration. Mr. Barrow came to power in December of 2016, and so far two ministers have been shown the exit door. First to be fired was Maifati, the leader of the Gambia Moral Party. Now, Habib Drame, a former official of the Gambia Tourism Authority under dictator Jammeh's rule, has also been removed. Mr. Drame has been redeployed to the president's office as secretary general and head of the civil service. Keta Sedi is a former Gambian army officer. He lives in the state of Maryland. Mr. Sedi tells VOA that Mr. Drame's removal was timely.
It's not a surprise to me because Habib, I don't know him personally, but I mean, looking at his background, Habib has no past experience of security personnel. And as a Minister of Interior, you need to have a background, either at least police, army, or at least have a study area, like criminology or criminal justice, a field area in that field.
Mr. Habib Drame told the Gambia Radio and Television Services, GRTS, few days before his firing, that the ease of job experience was insignificant as far as his appointment was concerned.
When I was being appointed, the president actually told me that the best security ministers ever produced by this country. We are all civilians. So it is that that guided his decision to appoint me more than anything else. As I said once again, I cannot be a better policeman than the policemen themselves.
The Gambia of late has witnessed a dramatic increase on crime rate, ranging from petty stealing and armed robbery. Members of the security forces have intensified patrols in an attempt to clamp down on criminals. Keita Sidi again.
And my advice to him, I think he needs to start looking at people's background, not just somebody he can get along, but people who know the job and who have some expertise in the area. Look at America. Any appointment, most of the appointment, you have to have a background. You have to specialize on that. You don't just see somebody, well, we get along, or he's going to listen to me. No, look at the country at the large. What's going to benefit the country?
Demba Ali Jao is Gambia's information minister. Mr. Jao debunked reports that the president is trying to consolidate himself to power by recycling public officials.
I do not think that is anything to do with that. You know, it's just a question of deployment. As the president has the power to redeploy anybody, any position within the government. That is his prerogative.
The new interior minister, Ibrahim Mbalo, is a former member of the defunct National Gendarmerie. He is also a former banker. Both Mr. Mbalo and President Barrow hail from the Upper River region of the Gambia. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandey Mbai reporting.
People with disabilities in Liberia Monday stormed their old headquarters in the capital, Monrovia, disrupting classes at the group of 77 public schools, which is housed in the same building. They were demanding that the building be given back to them to be used as residence, as it has been since 1977 when it was first turned over to them. Titi Jibro reports from Monrovia.
The physically challenged people, most of them in wheelchairs, entered the building, ordered the students out, and began removing the blackboards and chairs from the classroom, chanting, "They are coming home."
Handicap International took us on this building for renovation. They told us to find place on our own for only 1 month. After that, they will call us back into the building. Since then, we have been on our own. Even the community we are, people don't agree for us to rent their places because they say we are disabled. We are not too good of being among them. It is too much that we cannot handle anymore.
They demanded the building be turned over to them, saying they are tired of dying on the beach where most of them reside in makeshift structures. The Persons with Disabilities Organization, also known in Liberia as Group of 77, has been officially occupying the facility, which was previously an all-people home since 1977, one of the reasons it was named that way and supervised since by the wife of the incumbent vice president. As a means of calming the tension, a quick meeting was called by the program officer of the Group of 77, Reverend Constance Kennedy, who claimed to have been representing Second Lady Katumu Mbwakai.
The building was already a school before we got here. And so she just kind of improved on what she met and kept it in that condition. And within that time, if anyone had come back and said, you know, it's not a school, they are rating or so, maybe some consideration, but for the 12 years, nobody made any qualms.
Reverend Kennedy said she was stunned by the performance of persons with disabilities, saying the school has been operational in the building even before the government of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. But the spokesperson of the persons living with disabilities differed with the program officer's account, saying they were always threatened not to speak out.
This Ellen government under the leadership of Katumwa Wabakai, the second lady of the Republic of Liberia, their government so wicked to the extent that they don't even want to see people living with disability. Yes, because if you advocate on your own right, they will jail you. Gefra was jailed.
The meeting, which was characterized by the throwing of jabs at each other, only came to an end when the principal of the school, Max Sobo, agreed they have 2 weeks to leave the building.
Outside, I see my children on the main street, not entering the compound to come to school. I was so downhearted and frustrated in the process. The problem right now, we meet with the leadership, the grief leadership. We are asking them to give us some time.
How much time?
The end of the school year. But they are saying that they'll give us 2 weeks to take our things from here.
With a new government expected to take seat by the 22nd of this month, it's unclear whether a compromise will be reached between the two groups before then. For VOA News, I'm Titi Jibra reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
The African Forest Landscape Restoration Initiative, known as AFRI 100, has lofty goals for this year, building upon their promise to restore 100 million hectares on the continent by 2030. The group hopes to document deforestation and add more countries to their list of nations that have pledged land. AFRI 100 coordinator Mamadou Diakete spoke to Ricky Stryak about how much they have accomplished and why it's important to realize their goals on the coming years.
We have 25 African countries that have joined the AFA 100 initiative, and these 25 countries represent over 85 million of hectares of land pledged to be restored. We can also say that several countries in Africa, like Niger, Ethiopia, Malawi, Rwanda, and others have already started doing restoration, the land restoration, forest, degraded forest restoration already, yes.
How many hectares have actually been restored at this point?
At this point, if we combine this question, actually imply another one that I can address later. The monitoring and counting of number of hectares has just started recently because this is a new initiative. But we can estimate that countries that I just mentioned that are doing comprehensive monitoring of degraded land are about 3 to 4 million to 5 million hectares of land degraded. If we count countries like Ethiopia, Niger, Rwanda, Malawi.
You said there are 85 million hectares pledged. What countries are you guys looking to for the remaining 15 million?
So the since 2015, we are doing a lot of awareness work, awareness raising to political leaders in Africa, the business sector, the NGOs, civil society sector. So we have a pipeline of applications, and we are expecting any countries in Africa that is interested to join. So all countries have been contacted, and countries like Sudan, South Sudan, for instance, Morocco, Senegal, and other countries have been are also considering to join this initiative.
What are the immediate benefits to residents living in these countries of the restoration?
If we take already into account the global benefits that are fully recognized, the main benefit first that we see as an African entity is that it helps to revive a lot of restoration techniques, practices that don't necessarily require big technology or big machineries.
That was Mamadou Diakete, coordinator for AFRI 100. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Johannesburg. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change has signaled it may be time for him to step down. Morgan Tsvangirai has been the leader of the MDC since its formation in 1999. That's it for this Tuesday, January 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.